It's time for Around the Horn, a look at minor league baseball.
How can you not be romantic about baseball?
Walk-offs and wild pitches are a guarantee.
It's wild thing!
Because
chicks dig the long ball.
Now let's go around the horn.
Play ball!
.435 on the sports line, Barlow's Steakhouse and Bistro Thursday. More on that coming up in just a second, but right now we're going around the horn with Ben Gelman, play-by-play voice of the Salem Red Sox. Hey, Ben, how's it going?
It's going well. We just finished up what I would have to say was a very successful All-Star Classic. All credit to the phenomenal front office team here, particularly our production crew and our ticket sales people who made sure the place was packed and everybody was having a great time. It was really fantastic, and I'm so lucky to have been a part of it.
You know, it all started off with a little natural-like moment in the Home Run Derby, huh?
Yeah, it was completely unplanned. You can never plan that kind of thing. And it's just an amazing moment that we were so fortunate to have in our ballpark and have that made-for-TV, made-for-the-movies moment that exploded over Twitter and over social media in general.
Ben Gelman with us here on the Sports Line. What did you glean from All-Star Weekend and learn that even you may have been surprised by, and you cover these teams on a regular basis?
I think I got a better sense of how good the best players in this league are. You see teams, you know, kick the ball around on a day-to-day basis. There are errors. There are teams that will knock around substandard pitchers. When you put all the best pitchers and all the best defenders in the league in one place, there's a reason that the All-Star Classic itself was a 2-0 game. These are guys who are just dominant on the mound, and the arms in this league do tend to be a little more advanced than the best. So it was an amazing performance by all the pitchers. Michael Chavis earning that MVP honor. We had a press vote. It was unanimous in his favor, just because there was nobody else who could do anything against the pitching all night.
Speaking of Michael Chavis, you got to appreciate him while he's here, because now he's gone, moving up to Portland, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, it's impossible to replace a guy like Michael Chavis. As the Boston Red Sox have discovered with David Ortiz, you cannot expect for one player to replace all of that. So it's a shame to see Mike and Chad De La Guerra head up to Portland, at least on a selfish level. Certainly for their careers, we are extraordinarily happy for them. And this is the way it goes with everybody. If we could keep everyone forever, we'd have a team with Chavis, Mookie Betts, Jackie Bradley Jr., and Andrew Benintendi. You know, Chavis might not see the field. So for us to say, oh, he should still be here, is a selfish thing on our part. But we will miss him in the lineup, no question about it. There's no getting around that. That being said, we've got Nick Lavolo back from Greenville, where he was hitting very, very well, and Steven Nogasek, a reliever out of the University of Oregon, who I'm particularly excited about having in our bullpen and adding a power arm to the back end for Joe Oliver and company.
Ben Gelman joins us here on Around the Horn discussing the Salem Red Sox, who begin their second half tonight against Wilmington as the homestand, four games tonight. Promotional opportunities that are out there for this weekend. Give us the one or two that you're most excited to see.
Well, I mean, tomorrow night we're going back to the 80s. It's 80s night, and it couldn't be more fun because we are giving away a bobblehead of our one-time owner back when we were the Salem Redbirds, Conway Twitty. We have a Conway Twitty bobblehead that we are giving out. It's going to be a great time. Of course, player poster giveaways every weekend. It's always a good time. And let me tell you, I've seen this bobblehead. I have seen the Conway Twitty bobblehead. It is rocking. It looks fantastic. And we're going to wear Salem Redbirds polos. The entire staff is going to be wearing Redbirds polos instead of our standard Red Sox gear. We are turning back the clock. Plenty of 80s friendly stuff. I have personally lobbied for as much Prince music as possible, but that's my personal preference.
All right, well, the second half starts tonight. Big four-game set with Wilmington. First game, 7:05 tonight, and you could hear it on 1240 ESPN Radio in Virginia in Roanoke. Thank you, Ben.
Thank you, guys. Have a great day.
Thanks. You too. Right now, we're joined by Chris Patola, college and pro hoops expert and analyst. Big NBA draft coming up tonight, and Chris, kind enough to join us once again. Hey, Chris, how are you?
I'm great, guys. Thanks for having me on again.
Hey, we really appreciate you taking a few minutes. I know it's a crazy day and tons going on, and it looks like lots more excitement maybe, you know, before the draft or, you know, the trades and all kinds of stuff. I mean, this could be crazy today.
Yeah, you know, it could. And I think part of that is, I think there's two things. A, Golden State has changed the paradigm. I mean, I think teams have figured out that in order to get to a point where you can compete, both with Cleveland, frankly, or whatever team LeBron is on in Golden State, you've got to make drastic moves. So I think that's part of it. The other thing specific to this draft is I don't think there is a huge gap or a discernible difference between the top pick, if that is going to be Fultz, and really I would take that all the way down to about 10 or 11. I mean, I think the gap between 1 and 10 is as close as we've had in quite a while. So I think teams are more willing to part ways with earlier picks. I mean, we saw Boston already do that. I think teams are more exploratory just because you can get really a good asset at, you know, again, later in the lottery or even into that later part of that first round, and not have to give up a whole lot as far as the talent that you might be foregoing early.
Chris Patola talking about the NBA draft with us here on the Sports Line. You mentioned that gap top to bottom in talent. That said, did the Sixers then make the right or the wrong call trading up, presumably to get Markel Fultz, a guy from Washington that, you know, a lot of us on the East Coast know is thought of highly for his upside but don't seem to know a lot about?
Well, you know, again, beauty's in the eye of the beholder. I have not been real high on Fultz for a number of reasons. I mean, I don't understand. Look, he's talented, okay, and he scored a lot of points, and he can create his shot, and he is a good athlete. He's 6'5". I mean, he has all that stuff. But I just don't understand how you can only win 9 games all year. You win 2 games in the Pac-12, and really 2 of those wins, one was against an Oregon State team that was as bad a Power 5 team as we've seen a while in college basketball. The other was against, not a very good Colorado team. They also lost in the non-conference to Yale, and at the time, Yale was playing without their best player. So I just, you know, again, you can make the argument he didn't have a lot around him. You can make the argument that he was, you know, he was in and out on a bad team and frankly was saving himself for his NBA career. But that's, to me, that's a red flag. I mean, if you're the presumptive number one pick, you got to win more games in the Pac-12 than 2 and more games overall than 9. The other question from a basketball standpoint I have with him is if, you know, I don't think the Ben Simmons project at point guard is going to work out for Philly. So then if you're in need of a player at that position, to me, Fultz is, I don't know if he translates as a point guard to the next level. Again, can score, create his own shot, but if point guard is what you need, Lonzo Ball is as good a point guard to come out of college as we've had in a decade. And frankly, if De'Aaron Fox can develop any semblance of a perimeter shot, he's even a better point guard at that position. So for me, Fultz is not the guy, but again, I think beauty is in the eye of the beholder.
You know, when that trade was first announced, I just kind of shook my head and like, man, you know, Danny Ainge, what an unbelievable job he's doing. And, you know, so to stockpile more picks, and I know at some point you're going to have to cash those in, you know, and actually get players. And I guess he's talking with the Knicks about Porzingis. And, you know, that's another question that we'll ask in just a minute. But first, talk about Danny Ainge and the job he's done for the Celtics. And, you know, even including this trade to drop back a couple spots, pick up a first round pick next year, and still have guys like Jason Tatum and, you know, and a ton of other guys who were sitting there. Josh Jackson, I mean, you're going to get one of those guys, and you picked up a, you know, a first-round pick next year. I mean, how great a job is he doing, in your opinion?
Well, you know what he does? I think he obviously has conviction. I think he has a lot of guts. I mean, the move he made this year, guys, I thought was a gutsy play. Because ultimately, if Markelle Fultz ends up being a superstar, you know, you obviously you passed on that. But he believes in who, you know, as he said, who they're going to take at three is probably who they were going to take at one. And so he goes with his conviction. I will also say this. He has done a nice job. Like, this idea of tanking has yet to prove out or bear any fruit. I mean, I just, this idea that Philly had of tanking and collecting draft assets, you cannot become good in the NBA, I don't believe, through the draft. I just don't think. I think Golden State, with who they had taken before Kevin Durant, I think that's an exception. I think, you know, even going back to Oklahoma City when they took Durant, Harden, and Westbrook, and they didn't even, you know, again, that didn't bear out into a championship. I just think those two were exceptions. For me, what Danny Ainge has done is he has obviously been active in the draft. They've accrued assets. They've done a nice job doing that. But he's also been active in free agency. I mean, he's tried to go out, and their brand is good enough still where he's gone out. He got Al Horford this last summer. They're going to try to make a play at Gordon Hayward. And who else, you know, they might make a play for coming down the road. See, to me, that's the problem with Philly is they have sacrificed their brand, and they've sacrificed that organization to the point where free agents don't want to go there. And so part of Philly's path forward is building that back up. So I think Ainge has done a great job. And it's funny because when he first got there, he caught a lot of hell for some of the moves he made. And then when he made that first big three move and how he finagled that, won a title, he's really did a nice job ever since.
A number of guys in the ACC are eligible to be drafted tonight. Obviously, we've got a grouping from Duke. Giles, Jackson, both have injury history. Kennard was solid. Jason Tatum could go as high as three. Justin Jackson from North Carolina, that grouping all on the list. Out of that and maybe some of the others, Jonathan Isaac from Florida State, who do you like the most and which one are you the most leery of?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, I really, really like Justin Jackson. And, you know, part of it is I'm still of the belief that, you know, the stigma that older players, you know, can't reach a full potential or can't get better in the league, I think is a misnomer. I mean, Malcolm Brogdon is a great example of that. You get a winner, you get a competitor, and you get a guy who's just a terrific player and really put a Virginia team on his back. You know, I think Justin Jackson is in that mold. He got better every year he's been at Carolina. He's become a very efficient perimeter shooter. He's 6'8". He's a good athlete, smart kid, good culture guy. So he's the guy that I'm really, really high on from the ACC, and a guy who, you know, again, will probably go mid, late first round, but a guy who I think is really talented. You know, the one guy that I'm leery of, and I would have loved to have seen another year, is John Collins out of Wake Forest. You know, again, I think a good player, but in a college basketball game where there aren't a whole lot of big guys, or at least guys who look like Collins, I thought his post-up ability is still pretty raw. He was a good rebounder, but again, you're playing in college against teams that don't have a lot of post players. He's not a great athlete. And he still hasn't shown the ability to step out and hit that face-up shot. So I was reading earlier this morning, there's been some movement or a lot of talk about John Collins. And again, I'm still a little skeptical. A guy I would have loved to have seen a little bit more. But all those guys from the ACC, I think Isaac has, to me, the greatest upside of any of these guys you mentioned. You don't get those freak type of bodies and athlete and a guy who still has a lot of development to go. And even Dennis Smith out of NC State, I think motor and how hard he plays kind of goes in and out, but reminds me a lot of a Steve Francis, just a really good athlete and a guy who can really score the basketball.
What about Phil Jackson and the Knicks. Porzingis now apparently on the block, but apparently the Knicks want way too much and their demands are ridiculous. Is this just a front to see if someone will really throw something crazy out? And I guess a follow-up question would be, is Phil Jackson as big a disaster as a general manager as he's being made out to be?
Yeah, he's even probably more so a disaster. he and I said this from day one. He almost went there to spite L.A., right? I mean, like, there was this, you know, he was going to go back to L.A., and he almost went to the Knicks. The money was good. I think he worked a deal with Charles Dolan where he wasn't going to have to invest as much as that title and that position would have to be invested in the process. And I think he went there out of spite. He was never equipped to be an executive. He had zero, and anybody can tell me all the titles he's won as a coach. He was zero expertise at that type of a position, just wasn't equipped to do it. And frankly, I think his ego has really been a hamper to him and to that organization. And I think the Porzingis, the latest of incidents from Phil Jackson, the Porzingis thing is an example of that. I mean, this is a guy in Porzingis who blew off, obviously, as we know, the end-of-year meeting. And I think this is Phil's way of saying, look, I don't care what any of you think. I'm Phil Jackson. And I'm not going to be pushed around, or I'm not going to be bullied by the future of our organization. And he pulled the same stuff with Carmelo Anthony when he first got there, and now he's doing it with Porzingis. And it's been a disaster. And if in the case of Charles Dolan, who himself has been a disaster, I don't think he can figure out a way to get out of it. I don't know if he wants to get out of it, but I think there's a part of Pitt Phil who could take this thing or leave this thing. But if he's going to be there, He's not gonna have that ego bruised or tarnished at all. It's been, you know what, guys? It's sad because New York and the Knicks franchise, when they do well, I think it's great for the NBA. And it may sound cliche, but it's a fact. I mean, there are certain organizations, like I think the Lakers have to get back to being good. And I think when New York's good, the NBA is better. And it's sad that franchise is being headed up. And it all starts at the top. They keep firing these coaches, or we blame it on Jeff Hornacek or Derek Fisher. The fact of the matter is they have an organizational problem at the top, and until they fix that, I don't know what the path ahead looks like.
Hey, Chris, I only got about 30 seconds left. Any big surprises you're predicting in tonight's draft, trades, whatever?
You know, it's tough. I mean, it's very tough to say what. I don't think the order that we have seen will be exactly what happens. Again, I mean, you've got 11 of the top 12 projected to be one and done guys. I think teams, it's an eye of the beholder draft, and so I think that order could be shaken up. But who knows? Trade wise, I'd be crazy if I'd start speculating on that now.
Lonzo Ball definitely go to the Lakers, though.
I think he does. Okay. I don't think there's any doubt about it. I think that top part will be pretty clear. I think obviously Fultz, I think Ball, and then Boston goes with either Tatum or Jackson.
Chris, thank you, man. Enjoy the draft tonight. We appreciate the time as always.
Yeah, always love coming on. Thanks, guys.
Chris Spitola joining us here on the Sports Line, college and pro hoops analyst. And we're late for a break. Got to take a quick one. Stick around. We're coming back.